Hello and welcome, fellow awesomologists to Awesomology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben. And in this episode, we're welcoming Dean DiCarlo, president at Mission Disrupt and relatively recent new credit union friend. Welcome to the show, Dean. Why don't you tell us about yourself?
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me. So I'm Dean DiCarlo, like you said, president of Mission Disrupt. And really, our whole goal is to help credit unions connect with the next generation of membership, whether that's through better user experience, paid social campaigns, paid media. Ultimately, you know, the backbone of everything we do is data-driven. So it's helping the credit union harness that data and then make decisions within each one of those channels that are really connecting them with millennials and Gen Z. And of course, we're still going to take care of all the other generations too, but typically that's why credit unions are looking for us.
Awesome. So can you tell us about your journey to get where you are, to become president of Mission Disrupt and what your work is like?
Yeah. So my journey is kind of short because it's not short, but it's my path to president is short because essentially I started the company in college.
Okay.
But during college, you know, I was one of those people where in high school, you know, I played left and right bench on the football team. So it was pretty obvious that I wasn't going to play for the New York Jets or the Green Bay Packers. So I needed to really figure out quickly what I was going to do. Really felt that pressure senior year of high school, like paying for college, need to figure this out. So I was always obsessed with like why somebody chooses to buy Tide over, you know, Target name brand, you know, or Target, you know, off brand. So at the end of the day, it was like, oh, marketing, that's why. So for me, it was headfirst into that world. Like I didn't waste a day. And I got a lot of experience. I was really lucky that I ended up, you know, internships with really large companies like 1-800-Flowers.com. And that got me, that helped me see a different side of marketing. Because I think when people think of marketing and advertising, they think of creative, which is ultra important. But the data side is really what's being used by executives to drive those decisions. So I was exposed to that, I think, very early in my career. But what I didn't love was working for these giant companies. I just kind of felt like another cog in the wheel. And, you know, at the time, that was probably like 2014, 2015. The emergence of mobile tech was really coming up. Paid social had launched in 2012 in terms of ads. So really, it was like this exciting time. And I started saying to myself, well, what if I could partner with emerging organizations or organizations that aren't as data driven and take those skills? So I started that like in my dorm room in college, first with nonprofits. And then we kind of scaled it up to what it is today, which is, you know, working with credit unions, working with a couple of Fortune 500 companies. So yeah, it's been an exciting journey nonetheless.
Go ahead. Well, so, okay. And listen, this is not going to add value to the conversation, but I'm going to say it anyway. So while everyone else is in college and doing the things that you do, like living their best life in college and not going to class and sleeping late and all of that stuff, you're starting a company. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah. Yes.
And what is that like?
Well, you know, I think, and maybe both of you can relate, but I think that I loved the college experience, but I've always felt that for marketing students, besides a select number of universities, there's a lot of like you're learning from a textbook and not learning from being hands-on. And that was the same experience that I was having in my school where I got good connections, but I didn't feel like I was, by the time I get to my senior year, I feel like it's just theory. So while I'm in class, I'm actually starting to take Google Ads certification, HubSpot certifications. I'm taking freelance clients on the side because I've already been working 3 years up until my senior year. I've had internships the whole time. So that last year, I was just like, I will do anything not to work full time and work and you know, have school at the same time. So I started doing the freelance for a few nonprofits. And at the time, I think, you know, it was like, maybe I was making like $300 a month. But when you're in college, I mean, there's dollar beers and, you know, you're pretty much college rich, right? So I was loving it. That's what I was doing my senior year. I was going to class, but I wasn't paying attention because I was in these certifications and because I was in ad platform working for the clients that I had at the time, which again was like one or two that I was making a few bucks on.
That's cool. I appreciate what you're saying about like that, you know, the hands-on experience or lack of hands-on experience with, you know, certainly marketing, but I'm sure it applies to lots of other fields too. I went to tech school, so luckily I had a lot of that hands-on experience. That was like the bulk of my school. I'll never forget. It was my first class, first college experience. I walked into a class that was all about learning the Mac operating system, which I had never worked on. I'd been on a Mac computer before, but never, you know, really did any work on it. And like day one, like minute two, we were like clicking around on the computer, getting to learn how to use it, you know, and everything. And that was really, really cool. And I appreciated that and kind of made it even more obvious and painful going to like some of the more general ed classes, which weren't quite hands-on and where there was a lot of, you know, textbook reading. And yeah, there's clearly a way that I prefer to learn, and it's definitely that hands-on experience. And I think for marketers and designers and stuff like that, you know, sure, you can learn a lot by hearing from someone's experience and reading books and all that stuff. Because even as much as I learned in college is another thing that I always say, as much as I learned in college, I learned a lot more in the first 6 months of actually working than I did my whole time in college. You know what I mean? So
it's super 100%.
Yeah. So what I was going to ask before was, and I'm totally going to just age you here. You started this thing in college. How long ago was this?
Yeah. So that was like 9 or 10 years ago. So okay. I'm 30 now. You know, the company's much bigger now. We're basically at 6 full time. We're looking to add another 2 full time people within the next 6 months. So yeah, it's a short story, but a long journey.
Yeah.
And awesome. no real journey to president. That was just me saying, hey, I'll start this company and I'll be the president.
Yeah, I'm president now.
Yeah. No real corporate ladder I had to go up, right? Sure. Skipped all the formalities.
Love it.
So as we were prepping for the show, Ben mentioned that one of the things your agency does that we really haven't explored, we've talked about, and I think variously thought it was a great idea and eliminated and thought it was a great idea and get it eliminated again, is influencer marketing. And I think there's this misconception that influencer marketing works for national, multinational brands, and for smaller brands, it just is not, it's not a strategy to pursue. So can you just tell us more about how you're working with that influencer marketing?
Yeah. And I think kind of what you're referring to, like when we're talking about smaller brands, we might also be talking like in the credit union space, like regional credit unions that might be restricted by their charter to go in certain areas. So sometimes influencer marketing, it could seem daunting, or it might seem like it's a waste of money, because typically what you see, it's like if you're an influencer, unless you're geography based, like the foodie of Houston, right? Their audiences are much wider than that area. So it seems like it might not be a smart spend. And that might be the case for some of them. But when we're talking about like connecting with the next generation of members, really what we're trying to think about is like, well, what's the medium, right? So influencers, like it's not that the influencer is like the medium that every credit union needs to use, because again, there are limitations to that. But what the influencer is doing though, is like they're creating this really personalized message communication where they're connecting. It's really like word of mouth marketing because it's peer to peer, right? So when they create a video, it seems more authentic. So like what we're advocating for is saying like, hey, why not, don't ditch what you're doing, but why not in terms of like putting static ads out or scripted ads? Those are all really important. But why not take that message and have a creator build out a video where they're just using their iPhone and they're explaining the benefits of being part of a credit union, the amount of savings that you're going to get, the idea that credit unions are really looking out for your best interest financially. So for us, we've been really big advocates of, at any level, why not try a tactic where you can connect with your members in a more personalized way? And this is a great way to do that. And then if you do have the larger charters, like, yeah, you can get into the influencers too. But no matter what, I think like as marketers, what we have to think is like, before we write off a strategy, like, let's like look at like really what the tactic is, like what's making this work, because there's audience, but there's also messaging. And what I find is that a lot of the regional credit unions, they're not looking at that messaging piece, and they should integrate it in, because what we typically found is that it's lower cost per acquisitions or lower cost per CPM, right? And that all happened just through testing. And a lot of that came through the corporate side of our business, where they don't have to deal with as much financial restrictions, and you know, they're moving quick. So when these new tactics come up, they adapt them very quick. And when we start seeing that happen on that side of the business, we're like, well, wait a minute, what about our credit union clients? Because this is great, because there's no one who has a more personalized story than what credit unions are doing for mm-hmm. people. So yeah, that's kind of like how we started with it. And like why we've been really advocating for this. It's another tool in the chest, but I think right now it was really overlooked. And I think we're now starting to see credit union marketers really talk about them and say, hey, wait a minute, how should we be doing this?
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. I think we saw a really interesting cycle with influencer marketing sort of in the credit union space, where just like everything else, it was everything that everybody was talking about. And everybody has to do it, quote unquote, and figure out how you can. And a lot of credit unions went, oh, we can't see the connection. We can't connect what we're doing to that. And so we've done, you know, we went to this webinar, we went to this seminar, we saw it at this convention, and we don't see the strategy there for us. So it got quiet for a while. And now, yeah. And definitely credit to TikTok and other, you know, social sharing sites that are heavily that more casual video. We're starting to see that resurgence in it. And, yeah. And this is just me throwing an opinion into the world, but I think maybe that's for the best, that that credit unions had to connect with it in the way that they could connect with it. And yeah. they had to see how the strategy could work for them, because I do think there was a danger that credit unions would be throwing good money after bad on a strategy that wouldn't have worked, because they were thinking, well, you know, who's our Michael Jordan to pick the worst reference for influencer marketing, yeah. possibly can. But you know,
no, I understand what you're saying.
That's the kind of stuff they were looking for, and it is, and it's likely, you know, when we're talking about a small regional credit union, it is likely someone very different than what they're thinking.
I think so. You know, the Michael Jordan reference is actually a good reference, because I think at first it was such this daunting thing that it's like, you have to go find the Michael Jordan. But in reality, it's not about finding the person with 30 million followers, even 500,000 followers. It's not about that. It's about finding the person that's connecting in your area. Mm-hmm. And if they have 10,000 followers, that's fine. If they have 25, like, that's completely fine. It doesn't need to be this like this slam dunk. But I think at first, when we were looking at the brands who were doing this, I mean, these were really big brands, right? So it did seem daunting. So I totally agree to that. You know, credit unions need to see how it would work, but then also realize that the thing that makes them special, localization, is why the strategy makes so much sense for credit unions in the first place. Because you go after the local influencers, the local content creators, it's the perfect synergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't, oh man, totally just lost my train of thought. What I was going to mention was that I think that part of the hesitation for folks too is just this general concern for authenticity. You know, I mean, it's one thing to identify the influencer regardless of, you know, audience size and where they are and everything, but also like them actually saying something that is a true difference maker for your brand, or, you know, they actually believe in what you're doing. Cause I think you can definitely tell when someone's clearly just being paid and when someone is actually like, you know, you know, really advocating for something and influencing people's behavior or consideration, right? So how can you share a little bit of, I mean, have you seen a similar thing? Can you share a little bit about how that's maybe overcome?
Yeah. I think that the good creators, when you hire them, so yeah, I think at base, you're totally right. Like if you could get somebody who's actually part of your credit union, who happens to be a creator and they're really good at making like that content, I would totally choose that route first. I think for a marketing team though, that's harder to activate on, especially when the paid social world moves really quickly. So you really need to get creative quickly because it fatigues very quickly and then you have to change. So then the element is like, if we're paying somebody to make the content, there's definitely a distinction between somebody who you're just paying and they're okay, and somebody who can really hit it out of the park. So the idea is like, you have to find a creator that's good enough to sell it to. My first option would be exactly what you're saying. Like, let's just try to use a member story. But if that's not available to you, it's about finding, really going through the creators, because a lot of these guys will take money, but you have to make sure that what they're saying, how they're acting, the skits that they're doing, mm-hmm. that it's believable, right? And we're talking like marketers, but that's the truth, because you guys know that the authenticity is so important. So, you know, what I usually say is like, when we put out a call to like our network for creators, like one of the things that we will do is like vet what their previous content, like what have your other brand, you know, brand partnerships looked like? And if it's somebody who is, you know, is explaining more product, like physical products instead of a financial product, which, you know, it's not tangible, do they have experience explaining something that's non-tangible? Is it believable? Is their tone matching? Is the demographic matching, right? Right. So if somebody in Texas, are they from Texas? It might sound different than somebody from New York, right? So it's like, if we're going to go down the route, and a lot of credit unions do go down this route because it's a speed is part of the equation. You have to just really vet that content creator to make sure that that message is going to come off the best way possible.
Yeah, you've mentioned message a couple of times. And one of the things I'm trying to call back to exactly what you said, but you mentioned about credit unions needing to understand that it is about the message. So say more about that. Say more words for us, Dean. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so why don't we just take it at like, let's just say Ben comes up with a really creative campaign for a simplicity or exclamation. Whatever like the main campaign, like if you guys are running that on TV, you have to start thinking about like, how do we drip in that campaign slogan into social? It's not just repeating that slogan for the creators, it's figuring out a way that they transform that, you know, built for TV ad into mm-hmm. something that looks really good on social media. So I'm going to give you an example. So for First Service Credit Union, in Houston, Texas. They've been running a campaign, Bank Like You Own the Place, because you do. It's a great campaign. They started it in March Madness. They are putting it on TV. It's really well scripted, really creative. And our part of this is we didn't come up with the campaign, but we handled the paid social. And in particular, finding creators that can really build out the messaging, and I'll get into the particulars of that, of how that Bank Like You Own the Place translates over into the social world. So their concept of Bank Like You Own the Place is that you are the owner, you are the boss. So all their TV, scripted TV spots are, you know, these outlandish commercials where a guy is in the grandstands of the basketball team, in a basketball stadium, and like he just, you know, he puts on a suit and says, gets into the huddle and says, "Hey, don't worry, I got this. We're down by 10. I have a plan of what we're going to do." It works out terribly. The team loses, but switches back to a scene at the credit union where it might not work out for you to be a boss in the real world, but in the credit union world, you are the boss of this credit union. So really clever spot by those guys. So what our creators did was they built out scenarios where they were the boss of the credit union, where they're showing up to the branch and they're picking up their feet, throwing up their briefcase, and so it's just really lighthearted, right? So instead of it being overly scripted, they're just trying to act like the boss of the credit union. Mm-hmm. So that's how it translated over. And they had to figure out how to build those skits to do that. So that's kind of what I mean by the messaging. You have to take the main campaign idea and say, like, how does this fit social? How is it fun, lighthearted? People can relate to it, maybe a chuckle out of it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're putting, I mean, there's a lot of trust in the influencer and maybe the people that they have around them to, you know, help translate that or help, you know, convert that from broadcast campaign to social. And I imagine there's varying levels of talent and support there from influencers to do that and do it well. How often, or like, what's that look like, and how much influence does the credit union market or the person that maybe hired y'all or hired the influencer to do the work, like, how much influence can they have on it to make sure that it's striking the chord, feeling authentic, all those things that are so important?
It's a tough line, because I think we come from, as marketers, all of us together, we come from a world where everything needs to be on brand. It needs to be pixel perfect. And the way creative on social is moving is that it does not to be, not only does it not have to be pixel perfect, but it's usually a detriment to your performance if you over harp on these things. Mm-hmm. So even if people are pushing us to say it needs to be pixel perfect, those brands are slower in the social space. Everyone else is moving and optimizing around it. So they're doing better. So it's I think it's really hard right now for marketers to try to figure out this cadence, because we're trying to get the buy-in from everyone above us. Now, when we're talking to these influencers, we have to realize that, you know, they do have an expertise for a reason. So what I try to tell our client is, like, we should respect, like, the concept that are coming up with, and then let's take some of your ideas with it. But I will say, like, I think it is a hard, as, like, I guess you could say, the person monitoring those deals and trying to walk them through it, that is something that's really tough, because it's not just about saying to the client, yes, yes, yes. Sometimes it's really going back and saying, like, guys, this is not going to work. Like, this, it's a good idea, but this isn't working, or you're over harping, like, you're over focusing on this. And, like, that's a scary, I think, idea, I think, from the agency world, because agencies are just used to saying yes, yes, yes. But the problem is, if you're not, like, our expertise is in this, we're doing this every day, so we see what's working and not working. So it's up to us to kind of build the trust on both sides and to take into consideration what the credit union wants and what the creator's thinking, and bridge that gap, right? I hope that answered that question.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I'm not super surprised by the answer, because I think a common challenge that folks in marketing, whether you're an agency or in, you know, in-house department, whatever, freelancer, whatever it might be, a challenge that we commonly have is, like, building trust, using whatever buy-in we might have, and creating an environment where, you know, the decision maker, the key stakeholder, the person writing the check, whoever it is, does trust you to do what's best with the information you have, the experience that you have, your education, you know, whatever it might be. Because we do live in this world where, you know, air quotes, everyone is a marketer. Everyone knows what looks good, what doesn't. And, you know, I think it's really easy for those decision makers, that pool of people that I just mentioned, to question the expertise that they've hired themselves, you know, to be on their team. Like, you have a marketing department for a reason. Like, trust them to make this decision, including if that decision is, let's trust this influencer to do their best. They have an audience and a following for a reason. It might not be pixel perfect, as you said, or it might not be 100% on brand, but also that's kind of the point, you know? So, that's a tough message to get across, because we're, for, you know, how long, forever, we've been talking about how important our brand is, and, you know, maintaining brand integrity and things like that. So if you, you know, veer away from that intentionally for any reason, I can totally understand why there'd be pushback and why that'd be maybe a, you know, again, air quotes, tough sell when maybe it's not, if you have things like trust and stuff like that in place, you know.
And there's different levels to this too. Influencer marketing, right? So I kind of call the strategy of the tactic overall, like, influencer slash UGC marketing. And the UGC stands for user generated content. And those are people who don't have followings, but they're really good at creating a Facebook reel or Instagram reel. And what I'd say is, if you're getting a lot of pushback from management of like, how do we trust this person? Or like, we don't want to deal with the liability of this, which is, that's a valid concern. Like, you would have to monitor somebody if you're entering into a 6 month or 1 year agreement, you'd have to monitor what they're putting on social. So to kind of walk into it, like, or crawl before you walk, you could just hire the content creators. And that way the marketing department has more control over what's going on. You put that into like a paid meta campaign. So you're controlling the distribution. And if you don't like somebody, it's just an off button, right? If somebody had, if the CEO one day said, I love it. And then 2 weeks later said, you know what? I don't like this anymore. You could literally just control that distribution. You know, you wouldn't have to go to the influencer and be like, all right, now you got to remove this from your feed. And now we have to, worry about what happens if the relationship goes wrong. I mean, that's an approach too, that I say, I think that's a really good first step for credit unions, just because the amount of control that they have, but yet the ability to try like a different tactic, right? And see how it works for them.
This is awesome. All good stuff. Like, I feel like we've built like this top 10 list of things to like be aware of, things to question, things to look for when you're considering influencer marketing. So let's just like convert this into some more content, because it's all super good.
Yeah. It's
all right. Well, transitioning a bit, Dean, one of the big projects that we're working on this year is writing a book about purpose in marketing. I don't think you and I have had the chance to talk about this yet. So a big project, but something that Sue and I are chipping away at over the course of the year, and we've had some recent exciting progress on. But one thing that we're doing is with all of our podcast guests this year, we're asking some what might feel like really big questions. So do your best. But the question is, what would you say is your purpose for doing what you do?
Oh man.
I know it's deep. Interesting. It's deep. I get it.
The purpose for, so the way that I look at myself is like not just an owner of a company, but like a marketer, right? So I think for me, like my purpose is like try to empower as many of the marketers around me as possible. Because we work with like a lot of really smart people. We're like in a really nice position where we really get to work with the heads of marketing and people who have been in the trenches. And like, those are my kind of people. So like my purpose is, I feel like being able to collaborate with them, being able to help them solve problems. And for me, like the community that we build in that, like even though they're clients, like it's really a powerful thing, and it brings happiness to me, because like I know we're working together to solve for like, you know, that common goal. So that's definitely like my business purpose for sure. And community is a big one too. Like we're starting, you know, these marketer communities that have nothing to do with my business, but everything to do with like taking all the marketers within like our region and trying to get them together for dinners and happy hours. Because again, like that connection, like the knowledge is power. The more knowledge people have, like the better they can do at their job. So like, that's been a cool purpose too, like now being able to help other people in their careers, whether they're ahead of me or whether, you know, they're in college. Like that's been a really cool thing, especially like when you have like a CMO from like a big company come to one of our events, and it's just like, I might not provide like the value they want, but if I like connect them to the other CMO and then like they have like this great mesh, like that's been really cool. So like I think my purpose is, you know, adding value and connecting people and building community. So that's my answer.
That's really cool. So this is something that you're actually doing, like you're connecting people locally in your area to just get together, chat marketing, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's called Marketing Mindshare. I actually started it like 4 years ago, 2 months before the pandemic. Mm. And we had 20 people come out, and it was like a whole dinner, and it was really cool. And so it went great. And then the pandemic happened, and like we tried to turn it into a podcast, but like it wasn't the same feeling and it wasn't the same value of having the people in the room. So it never really took off. And then we just started it again last month. We have an event next week, and we're going to do like quarterly events. So yeah, that's been exciting. And, you know, I think you get that in a lot of places. And like, Ben, you're part of like CUNA. Like that's awesome. Like, I'm jealous that I can't go to those events, because it's like, I really like all the people that we get to meet with at those conferences. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my jam, being able to go into those classes and learn. That's why I do that, even as like the vendor. People are like, why aren't you at your table? And I'm like, because there's just no value here. I'd rather go out and learn, you know?
Yeah. 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 I was going to say that the meetup sounds very credit union cooperative of you, right? Like, just getting people with this common bond together and sharing information and helping each other, even if maybe, I don't know, I imagine there's some folks that at least are crossing paths once in a while, maybe even straight up competition, you know, but
I definitely
believe that, you know, there's enough lunch to go around, you know, there's enough opportunity for folks. So like, gosh, it's like very cliche, but the high tide raises all boats kind of thing. Like, if we help each other out, if we're connected to other people,
say that.
Yeah. You know, so that's really cool of you to do that.
Yeah, and I think that is the, you know, because marketing is such a competitive field. But the reality is that there's more than enough to go around, and that the people who are banding together and even connecting people with the right people, it's just going to be better for your career or your business or your agency if you just run it that way. So that I've been a big believer in that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we know the power of being able to get into a group with the people we work with and brainstorm and pitch ideas back and forth. And so to be able to expand that group and talk to people who have the experience, have tried things you haven't tried, very much like this conversation we're having today, it sounds phenomenal.
Well, it sounds like Sue and I have just made a reason to get out to the East Coast. We can attend one of these things. And
yes, that's next month. We can make that. Yeah, right,
we'll figure it out.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, it's going to be great. It's at a brewery that's like right on the water. It's going to be trying to keep the events fun. So
yeah, sweet.
So how can people get connected to Mission Disrupt? Or are there other things maybe you'd like to get people connected to? Maybe events like that you're talking about?
Yeah, so marketingmindshare.com, that's definitely one of them. People can kind of sign up to be part of like the newsletter there. We're in the middle of a site revamp, but there's still a form that they can fill out to get kind of information. It is, you know, our physical events are in New York. So, and not New York City, Long Island, specifically east of there. So that might be harder to get, but I think as we develop the community, it already makes sense that there's probably going to be some online portion to this. So we're different talks about different things. So it's worth it to sign up. If you ever want to connect with me, I think LinkedIn is the best. Like, just shoot me a message, or even if it's just like a question of like, hey, send me an example of like how people are using influencers or UGC or anything else. So, you know, I'm constantly posting online about tactics we're using in different parts of the business. So LinkedIn is definitely the best way to get in contact with me.
Awesome. Great. We'll share that stuff out for sure.
Awesome. Well, this has all been super great. It's always good talking to you, Dean. And I think you're just doing such important work, and I love your like collaborative mindset and everything. I think, you know, when I first met you, you know, it was kind of when you were just getting into the credit union space, or maybe had been there for just not too long. So, and I remember you mentioning how, you know, kind of like your eyes were open to like the community and, you know, how it feels like this big,
oh, definitely
big, but also little family and everything at the same time, which I think is something we can all relate to. And just, I think your nature and your collaborative mindset, I think that the reason that you were so pleasantly surprised by credit unions and stuff is because it feels like who you are. Like, I feel like you belong. So we're super happy to have you here. And thanks for sharing all the information. We do need to transition to our wrap up, which is our Something Awesome segment, where we all share recommendations for cool things we've heard, read, seen, done recently, whatever it might be. Lots of good book shares and content. My to read list is constantly getting longer because of this segment of the podcast. So we should probably shut this down so I can actually catch up. But I'm going to kick it off. And this one is absolutely pointless, totally, totally unrelated to the work that we do. But I just saw it recently. I was like, I got it. This is going to be my next Something Awesome. Have you guys heard of magnet fishing?
No.
I think on TikTok, but.
Okay. So yeah, more. I just learned about magnet fishing and I think I saw it either on TikTok or a reel or something. This couple who magnet fishes, which basically is just you toss like a super high powered magnet into a river or a lake, you know, whatever. And it kind of like dredges the bottom, drags across the bottom, and out comes anything magnetic that sticks to this super high magnet, super high powered magnet. And this couple, who also they have like a social channel where they like share all the weird things that they found, like guns and jewelry and, you know, whatever, right? They found a safe, and in the safe, somewhere between $60,000 and $80,000 in $100 bills. Yeah. Right.
Wow.
So, and you know, water got in and everything. So, in the reel or whatever it was I was watching, they're kind of like flicking through it and everything. And some of it's just like super muddy, murky, and probably is going to go bad. But their best guess was that like at least 3/4 of it was good to go. So, so like when I first was seeing this, I was like, what in the heck? Who are these people? What in the heck is magnet fishing? Crazies, like what's going on? But hey, it's paid off for them at least, right? I don't know what the success rate is for magnet fishers finding safes full of cash. It's probably pretty low a bit. Yeah, so I didn't share the link in the notes yet, Sue, but I'll make sure to get that in there. And yeah, like I say, totally pointless, super weird, but maybe a new side gig if anyone's got some extra time.
There you go.
I like the idea of that.
Dean, I think you're up. You got anything?
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'm reading a book right now that I really like. I have two things. So the book that I'm reading is called Radical Candor. I think it's pretty popular. A lot of people know it. But for me, as our team grows, I'm always trying to like really like, I guess, check myself and make sure like, how can I be a better leader to people, not just in work, but just as a boss, right? Or as a mentor to some of the employees. So that book, I'm only like, I don't know, maybe like an hour in, but I can already tell like it has a good effect. It makes me, you know, have a different perspective. So I would definitely add that to the reading list. I already think it's in like the top 10 lists. So I'm sure many people have read it, but I like what I'm reading so far. Awesome. And then the second thing, so that was just more of like, it's just more of like things to do, right? Or, right? Like just cool things that I like.
Whatever you want to share.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on the topic of like perspective, when I started traveling a lot last year or 2 years ago, Ben, you know, part of that is on the credit union conference or, and the other part of the businesses that I go to as well. So I'm doing more traveling than I've ever done before. And what I try to do, I think anybody who travels for work, like, you know how fast paced it is. So what I try to do now is get in a day early and really explore the city or the town or like wherever I'm at and kind of just go by myself and walk aimlessly, sometimes no plans, and just kind of figure out what I discover. And for me, it's been really eye-opening because I get to see different people. I get to see, you know, different cities, different things, different cultures. And I think as a marketer, that helps, whether you're on the creative side or you're on the data side, it helps a lot to kind of reset you and maybe look at different behaviors and say like, oh, how can I take this perspective and put it into my day to day? So yeah, that's something cool that I've been making an active effort to do because it's easy for me to just fly in the day it starts. But taking that extra time, I think it's good for just a marketer in general, or just a person to be able to get that perspective and not just get caught in the conference room for the whole time.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Just as a human to kind of reset your brain, travel's exhausting and all of that stuff. So yeah, that's super smart. And I remember you showing me your pictures from the last conference in Vegas that we were at together where you went hiking and stuff, just like beautiful stuff, like not too far away that like, yeah, if you go there and you're in conference mode and stuff, like you never even know what's around the corner.
Yeah. So I flew in at 2 a.m. that day, the day before the conference, but I didn't get in until 2 a.m. And then I had booked like a private shared tour at 8 a.m. to go to the Valley of Fire, which is where the pictures were. And I was with two people from Singapore and a retired couple from Louisiana. We were just in a car together and we literally took this half day tour. I was exhausted, but it was so great to just meet people from around the world and get that perspective. And I'm glad I did that.
Yeah, that is awesome. And really, that I think is the spirit of this whole segment of our podcast, is that idea that anything that fires you up, anything that brings you joy or a different perspective as a marketer is something to consume and to encourage other people to consume, so that those experiences and all of that flavor of life can inform what you're doing.
Right. I mean, there's the Valley of Fire, and then there's magnet fishing, guys. Don't forget about the magnet fishing.
Nobody's going to forget
it. Don't sleep on it.
I'm going right after this. I'm going to take the rest of the day and just...
Okay, cool.
Gone. I just have a very small magnet, but
let me know how it goes.
We'll see what I can get.
I'm going to buy a big one on Amazon.
Yeah, there you go.
Go big or go home.
Okay, speaking of experiences and speaking of community and all of those things, I have a hyper-specific one because it is specific to my community, but it's something that I'm excited about. This week was the first attempt for a local business here to start a weekly food truck lot. Now, you are in the Long Island area, Dean. What you don't know is I'm in central Wisconsin. I'm in a relatively small town, 18,000 people or so, Wisconsin Rapids. And one of the things I think that we have struggled with for a long time is that idea of having a third place. So a place for us in central Wisconsin, that means there isn't a place for people to be together, to see the community, to see other people outside of work or home, other than bars and church. So to have another opportunity for that. So my husband and I got to go Tuesday night to the first event, and it's in the parking lot of what used to be a hardware store. There is a rental business in that building now, but they rent things like, I don't know, log splitters, you know, I think that kind of rental equipment, blower waxers. So they have this whole part of their parking lot that there's no reason, comes with the building, but there's no reason people are ever using it. So they just took over that business. They started this effort and it filled that parking lot. I think that when we got there at about 5 o'clock on Tuesday night, I bet there were 300 people there, which is for our town, a massive crowd. That's a massive crowd. And so I'm just very excited about it. I'm going to share the link to their little Facebook page. And again, if the hyper-specific people who listen to this podcast, the Venn diagram of people who listen to this podcast and also live in my town, they should go check it out. Or if you want to travel from Long Island to see food trucks in a rental lot, this is the place to go.
Yeah, or anyone can start one in their town, maybe inspired by the idea. So
exactly.
Wait a minute. What did you get? Like, what did you eat or drink?
Thank you for asking. I'm very glad you did ask that. We had gourmet grilled cheese sandwiches.
Oh, sweet.
What we had. Mine was a pizza grilled cheese sandwich, which was quite delicious. And my husband had one that had, it was called the Mac Attack. And I know it had macaroni and cheese on it. And I can't remember what all else. I think macaroni and cheese and meat. And some other things. And so that was, you know, also not something we don't have. We're not one of those fancy schmancy towns that has a gourmet grilled cheese restaurant.
Yeah. That's where the food truck comes in, man. That's
right.
Perfect.
Right. So
awesome.
The food trucks are great. You get a little bit of different culture from everywhere.
Yeah.
Unique spins, people who are really just like, they're just trying to get their concept out there, you know? So sometimes it's the best.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. It's like the mobile version of the burrito shop that looks like a hole in the wall. The sign just says burritos no other information, but you know that the burritos are going to be awesome.
Right.
That's what food trucks are. They're exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. All good stuff. Well done, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, everyone who's listening, for joining us. Thank you, Dean, for taking time out with us today. We really appreciate getting the chance to talk to you.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me. I love it. Love the podcast name. Love the concepts. This is great.
It's awesome. Thanks, Dean. Well, if you, listener, if you think you love it, you can always catch up on it. And Dean, you can catch up on it too. You can go to our website or on your favorite podcast app and find us. You can find us at our blog, exclamationcuso.com/blog. Catch up. We're in our sixth season. This is our 12th show of our sixth season already, which I cannot believe.
Unreal.
How fast this year is going.
Congrats. Amazing.
Yeah, it's been good. And it's really been good because we've had awesome guests like you. So thanks again, Dean, for being here. Thanks, Sue, as always, for your coordination. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Be awesome and see you next time.
The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.